I'm noticing a trend. The designers standing out on social media today are the ones that are using video to showcase their work. That little extra bit of motion is the easiest way to make your designs feel premium. And that's why I'm such a big fan of Jitter. It's like Figma, but for motion design. So you don't have to wrestle After Effects to make a killer highlight reel anymore. Jitter makes it way easier. You can import your designs with their Figma plugin, and they have beautiful templates to help you get started. If you want to give it a try, head to dive.club/jitter. That's J-I-T-T-E-R. Okay, now on to the episode.
Because I have knowledge of both design and engineering, I realized that, hey, there's a version of autocomplete component suggestions that we can build that's feasible from both a technical perspective, but also simultaneously appealing to designers. So that's something you can constantly do, where you can look at the state of your technology and the constraints you have there. And if you then look at the opportunities and the user problems in design, and then if you're a design engineer, you by yourself can kind of see the Venn diagram and you can see the opportunities, which is like super compelling.
Welcome to Dive Club. My name is Rid, and this is where designers never stop learning. This week's episode is a special one because it was filmed live at Config with Vincent Vandermeulen. Now, he was a design engineer at Diagram and joined Figma alongside Jordan Singer and the rest of that crew. So this episode is a deep dive into the story behind Figma's new visual search feature. We talk about the big pivot that happened mid-project, how Vincent went cowboy mode to get buy-in from the team, and we also share some thoughts about the future of design engineering. But before we get into all of that, let's go all the way back to the summer of 2023, because this project looked pretty different when it first started.
So visual search is certainly not the point where we started. And it's actually kind of wild to see where we did start. So it all starts at Config 2020-23, and Diagram has just been acquired by Figma. And on stage, we talk a lot about autocomplete and our explorations with autocompletes. But one of our main insights of that keynote is that building autocomplete is really hard. And it's hard for a variety of reasons, but one of the reasons is that the design assistant just has to suggest quite a big chunk of design at once to be useful. So when I talk about autocomplete, I mean the notion that as you're working, a design assistant is predicting what you want to do next before you actually know it. So it's a very magical experience. But for that to be magical, the design assistant actually has to predict a significant chunk of design on the canvas. So that's quite hard to like do that all correctly at once. And then it also has to place it in the right location, which is quite difficult because, you know, you might be using other layout, you might not be using other layout. So positioning is also a significant challenge of that. So that's kind of where we were at the end of Config 2023, just realizing that autocomplete is hard, but really wanting to build it. And then we have this inaugural AI hackathon where we come up with this idea that we can make autocomplete significantly easier if we just reduce some of the scope. Like maybe instead of like this big chunk of design, we can just suggest a single component at once. And instead of, you know, making the design assistant place it on the canvas for you, maybe we can just have a designer drag the suggestion to the right location. So we came up with this project called Component Suggestions, where as you're working in the asset panel, we try to suggest the next component you might want to use. And then the designer just has to drag it over to wherever they want it. So you're creating a create account screen, and the design assistant will, in the asset panel, be like, hey, do you want a primary button? Here it is, and I've already filled out the text for you. So you'll get like a primary button with the text that says create accounts. So we thought it was very promising. And during the hackathon demo, it actually seemed very compelling. Like I'm able to design screens faster than I could because this design assistant is constantly handing me these components with the props filled out. That's where we started. And we got so much love from the hackathon demo that we actually decided to build it. So we set out to make that our next thing, component suggestions, the simpler version of autocompletes.
You know, I have a lot of conversations about how, in many ways, AI tooling is lagging for designers as it relates to developers. And I hadn't actually considered the spatial component as a primary variable for that until you mentioned it. Because it's not like you have the blinking cursor. You also have to figure out not only what comes next, but like, where the heck do we put this thing? So it's interesting to hear some of the challenges that you were thinking through.
So many challenges, like where is the designer working, right? Like you have like this big web design screen that's like 1280 pixels wide, and like the designer might be working in the bottom left corner. They might be working in the white space in the center. And yeah, in a text editor, like for GitHub Copilot, right? You have a blinking cursor that like indicates where the programmer is working and where they are thinking. in a design tool, you just have none of that, right? The designer is just like moving their cursor and it's entirely unclear where you should suggest something. So that's a huge challenge of like autocomplete in, yeah, like a design environment.
It makes sense then why you kind of moved that series of explorations to the components, like the assets panel. Can you go even deeper? Like, what were the types of little knobs that you were turning in those early prototypes? And what were some of the things that you were exploring and thinking about?
Yeah, so the initial plan was fairly easy. We just take the user selection, we convert it to a text representation because it's 2023 and large language models only understand text at points. So we convert the user selection to text, and then we just ask GPT, given a list of components, which component would you like to insert next? So that's where we start. And again, this hackathon demo was a hit, and I'm able to design these very simple screens very easily because this component suggestions autocomplete is just able to suggest the next component super quickly. But then when we actually start running it on real designs, when we start giving it to Figma designers, it just breaks down entirely. Like, the component suggestions are suddenly random. You get components that don't fit the scenario at all. You get components that a real designer would never use in that scenario. So at that point, we indeed have to like turn many more knobs. So we try looking like, hey, how do we make this like simple component suggestion system better? So that's where we start thinking of, okay, the way you and I design, whenever we're in a scenario, we have to predict the components. We look at like, what have we designed in the past? What have other designers designed in the past that's similar? And what components were they using? We figured that, okay, we can make this component suggestions project a lot better if we start giving this LLM access to anything that's been designed in the past that's similar to your current selection. If only it can see examples of things that are similar to your selection, then it can know exactly which components are and aren't appropriate to use in that scenario. So at that point, you kind of get a system where you select something, we run vector search on your selection to find similar designs, and then we pull those similar designs into the context window of the large language model, also in the form of text, because that's ultimately what the large language model expects. But of course, this whole notion, right, of searching similar designs, like we had to build that.
So take us to the exact moment where you started to kind of realize like, okay, the initial path that we set ourselves on, there might not be a viable future here. And then what was it like even ideating on how you might slightly pivot into a new direction?
It was rough, honestly, because we spent months trying to make this component suggestions project work. We would have like these research sessions internally, and then we would make changes, and then we would go back to research. But we just kept having designers be like, what even is this suggestion? Like, why are you showing this to me? And when we started feeding in past designs into this autocomplete, we figured, okay, surely this is really going to help the autocomplete nail the component prediction. If we just give it a bunch of past designs, it's going to do amazingly well. But what actually happened was that it still suggested random components. And we had made this system just so complex that it was hard to reason about. We had like a bunch of steps like chained after each other, one of them being search, and all of these steps had like some failure rates. So ultimately the chance of success was just way too low. And we realized, okay, we are in over our heads and we have just made a system that's too complex. We need to make this a lot more simple. And hey, wait a second, this first step that the assistant is doing, search to find similar past designs, is actually very interesting and useful on its own, which looking back was a complete no-brainer because I myself had prototyped image search at Uber like years prior. Like looking back, we probably should have known from the start that, hey, search is actually a great product to build. Just start there instead of trying to build this super complex autocomplete. But sometimes you just have to try building ambitious things and realizing that it doesn't work yet. And then, go from there.
I want to get all the way into visual search. Mm-hmm. Let's set like a few pieces of context first. The first is you mentioned working on somewhat similar things at Uber. Can you talk a little bit more about that experience and maybe even the role that it played in this problem set the second time around?
For sure. Yeah. So I've always been just obsessed with the idea of like finding designs and how do you give designers insight into what's happening across the org, like what similar designs other designers are making, but also how do you help designers find their designs quickly? So at Uber, like my coworker, Christian Rao, came up with this idea of Design Finder, where we indeed had this Design Finder Slack channel at Uber. And he pitched this idea of, let's just make a tool that lets designers find designs by uploading an image. So him and I started prototyping that, and we actually built this demo where, given any screenshots, Uber designers could find their design in Figma. But this was kind of where it stopped, because, you know, we are at Uber, we're not at Figma. We don't have access to the design tool internals. So we built this fun prototype, but it was completely unfeasible to build reverse image search for Figma when you're not at Figma. So we presented it ultimately at Figma Schema as, hey, it would be cool if somebody would build this, but we figured it wouldn't be us because, hey, we're at Uber, like we can't take this any further than just this fun like concept car. So that was like years ago. So to now be able to return to that project in a way was like very satisfying.
Not only return to the project, but have Uber be the example in the keynote. Yeah, that is really cool to hear.
And work on that keynote with like the same people I work with at Uber too. It was hilarious in a lot of ways. But
amazing. Okay, so you said something else. You talked about these research sessions internally.
Yeah.
Give us a little more context about that. What did that look like?
Yeah, I mean, shout out to our researcher, Gus Griffin. But with Gus, we would basically set up like these bi-weekly research sessions where we would just give our autocompletes to designers when it was still autocompletes. And we would just tell them like, hey, pretend we're not here. Go try to design your design work like normal and see if this autocomplete is helping you. So that was kind of like the way we improved autocompletes and ultimately also started improving our search was through these bi-weekly research sessions, maybe. And then in between these research sessions, the goal is to crank out as much code as possible to hopefully have something better by the next session, right? Like if one session was bad for some reason, then we would try to just quickly debug why it was bad in that way. And then hopefully, whatever, show up better next time.
Is there a specific example that you could share of something that you learned in one of those sessions and how that informed the next couple weeks of work?
Yeah, one of the issues that like we talked about, right, like was not knowing where like designers are working. So we saw that a lot where like a designer was like working, whatever, they were working the sidebar in a web design and then they got a suggestion for an area in their design that's like in the bottom right or something, a completely unrelated area. So then we started thinking like, okay, for our next research session, maybe we can give the large language model context about where you have been working recently, about your recently selected layers. Because maybe if we tell the design assistant like, hey, Rid has recently been like editing these layers, maybe it can then know where to suggest something for. So that was like one of these ideas where like, okay, like we see a problem in user research and then we try to fix it.
Okay, another piece of context then is, you know, you're a year after this acquisition of Diagram, kind of this small little tight-knit team. Can you just give us a little bit of a picture of like, what is your new role look like in Figma and how are you operating as a squad now, kind of just in this much broader org chart?
Totally. Yeah, so at Figma, my role becomes like software engineer because we don't have design engineers officially, but I remain a design engineer in spirit. And the fun thing is that for this project, I get to collaborate with Marco and Jordan, and collaborating with those guys is just incredibly satisfying because, you know, I've worked with them a bunch. And so we all have a good understanding of what we want, what good and bad design looks like. Importantly, it's just incredibly fun. We're just constantly laughing as we're working. So what this looks like, for instance, with Jordan, and I'm using Jordan because he works in the New York office, is we go in the morning and I know that Jordan shows up like super early at around 8 a.m. and we just start cranking on these design problems and we just throw out a bunch of wild ideas. And then we're like, okay, this seems good. And then we start prototyping that. And then a few hours later, we just have a deployment link where people can like play around with like the idea themselves. And then, yeah, we would just like, okay, take another look at it and decide whether it's good or bad and then potentially toss it or keep it and actually build on it. So that was a super fun cycle with Marco and Jordan, just constantly trying to prototype ideas as quickly as possible. And then especially not being afraid to just completely toss all of these ideas out of the window, because ultimately what matters is that this thing feels right and you shouldn't stop until you're there.
It's a measuring stick that I'm becoming increasingly interested in terms of like how I think about the way that teams work is the percentage of code that's thrown away. I think that speaks a lot to like the culture of prototyping. I would assume that you're probably throwing away a lot of code as you're kind of figuring out what's possible with AI.
No, totally. Because a lot of these ideas, you can't really get a sense of what they feel like, right? Like when you're just like drawing them out. So you really want to get to a point either via a prototype or just by actually coding it up that you can verify. It's often whenever someone designs something, I don't even bother saying like, oh, A or B is better. I just say like, okay, make them both, send us deploy links, and we'll try them out both. We'll throw one away. That's fine. That's just the cost of doing good work.
So can you go a little bit deeper about how you collaborate with Marco then, who is in more of like a traditional designer role? It's kind of an interesting problem space with AI because so much of the quality of the quote unquote design is tied to the quality of the output from these underlying models. How does that impact the way that you collaborate with someone who is in a full-blown designer role?
Marco also has an engineering background, so it helps a lot. But the way I collaborate with Marco was, I think it really comes down to like kind of communicating what problems you're running into as you're like developing these models. So with Marco, it was a lot like, hey Marco, we have like problem X. Our search is, instead of returning useful designs, it's actually returning cover images. You know how every file has a cover image. What should we do about that? So it's a lot about like just communicating what you're experiencing on the ground with these AI models and then just letting good designers like Marco run with it. But the one thing that is different is that these models will just never behave the way you expect. You can draw out all these fun designs about, you know, your search function working properly and like returning the right things. But then in practice, there's a lot of weird things you have to design around and weird things you have to account for. So what helps there is just like this tight loop of designers where you're not going to like be able to anticipate all those ideas. Like you just need to like start building and counter those ideas and then go back to like an awesome designer like Marco and be like, hey, this came up. Let's talk about how to fix it. Let's whatever. Let's help on the Slack huddle or let's talk this through because we should, address this.
I mean, it kind of does feel a little bit unique to me actually, because like what you're describing specifically this cover photo example, it's not really a pixel problem. It's not something that you would be like, okay, I need to think about how to solve this. I'm going to draw things in Figma and figure it out. Uh-huh. It is a lot more like conversational and sparring on how we even want to think about the way that users would interface with an AI model.
Mm-hmm.
One more question then about the diagram, unit, the squad specifically. How has the way that you all work evolved now that you're part of this much larger org?
I think you have to, when you're part of a larger org, you have to spend a lot more time bringing people along for the journey. A diagram was pretty simple, right? It was just five people and often was just whatever, me, Jordan, and Andrew, for instance, like in the WeWork. So when we had an idea, you'd go up to your CEO, the big boss, Jordan, and you'd be like, hey, Jordan, I want to do this. And Jordan's reply would always be, hell yeah, let's do it. So that was pretty easy. Whereas at Figma, right, like you need to be more careful because you need to work with partner teams. People need to make strategic decisions as to what projects to invest in. So you really have to bring people along for the journey more, where you have to like think more about, okay, like communicating why is this project important? Why should people care? And really be more deliberate there, which is something I learned over time.
It's fun to hear you talk about that because you also have this tweet from not long ago. You say, everything is low priority until a cowboy comes along and shows people the way. What's the backstory there? And how does that tie back to this pivot to visual search?
Yeah, some backstory there is that we were building autocomplete, right? And autocomplete wasn't going well. And after a few months, we just don't have anything to show for it, which isn't great. So at that point, we are starting to think of just shipping search instead. But, you have to bring people along. You have to convince the rest of the company that this is a good idea. I had tried doing this earlier in our projects. At some point, I actually really wanted to build text search instead of this more complex autocomplete. And I'd written this text document, this PRD, where I basically outlined the case for text search, where it's like, hey, we should build text search for these reasons. And given this machine learning model and a fine tune like this, we can probably pull it off. And that PRD just completely went nowhere. People were excited about it, but everyone was like, I'm not sure if I believe what's written here. Like, do you have any proof that that we can indeed pull off text search? That's like what you're writing about these machine learning models is actually true. So when I tried pitching things in written form, it didn't really go anywhere. When later on, like we again pivoting to search, I was like, this time I'm going to do it differently. I need more proof. Well, I need to actually show to people that, hey, from a technical perspective, you have nothing to worry about. We're going to nail this. One thing before I come into the story was something that my coworker, Matt Daly, did, where he briefly proved that, okay, if you represent designs as images, search is actually quite feasible. We can build reverse image search quite easily, and we can build selection search quite easily. Here, I have like this small little playground that you can play around with it. So my coworker kind of did like this small, proof of concept where he proved that from a technical perspective, it was possible. But on my side, and this is where the tweet came from, on my side, I really wanted to like show people product-wise, not just from a technical perspective, but product-wise, that like search was a good way to go. So what I did is over the course of 2 weeks, I built this end-to-end prototype where I started showing people, hey, using our technology, building search is actually possible. When we build search in this way, it unlocks a myriad of product opportunities like selection search, like text search, and like image search. And because I'd written the PRD before that like didn't go anywhere, I was like hell-bent on actually making a working prototype this time. So over the course of 2 weeks, I just, make this functional prototype that just shows people end-to-end. These are all the product use cases that it would unlock. Here's how it, what it would look like in the product. And because it is working in our code base, you don't have anything to worry about really, because I'm using completely real tech. Of course, the real thing is going to be harder, but this is also real. So that really helped in bringing people along this time and making them more comfortable believing in search.
I know this is not an engineering podcast, but I do think it's important for designers to understand some of these foundational models, how they work, how it impacts like systems level decisions. And so you were saying phrases like, you know, design as images. And I think some people listening might be like, well, of course designs are images. What do you mean by that? So can you talk a little bit more about the underlying tech? Like what system level changes did you have to pitch and ultimately make to enable some of these UX experiences?
Yeah, so when we were just building autocomplete, when we were building the search for autocomplete, we were representing designs as text because ultimately the large language model needed like a text representation of a design. So the search step that we were doing was also using text. So given your selection, we would convert your selection to text and then try to, using an embedding model, find similar designs based on their text representations as well. It turns out finding similar designs based on the text representations is actually a really bad idea because designs are very visual, right? So often they use a lot of images. Often they have a lot of like visual characteristics. So one of the reasons why our initial autocomplete search wasn't good was because we went the text route with our search and because we were trying to find designs that are similar in using text form. So a huge insight was that, okay, of course, any AI model for design should be visual instead. So instead of converting designs to text and running search on those text representations, let's just take all the beautiful pixels that they are and let's find similar designs using those.
So I know you made a prototype, which obviously speaks a lot louder than a PRD, but what were some of the other ways that you de-risked this in the minds of other people on the team?
Yeah, so I made an end-to-end prototype, again, just to show that from a technical perspective, this is possible. And it was this prototype that kind of showed, okay, you can do selection search, you can do image search, you can do text search. But I figured that a prototype by itself wouldn't be enough because, you know, you have this prototype. What are you going to do? Are you going to send people a link? You have to, I guess, like get people to click on it. You have to trust that people like understand the prototype without your narration. So one thing I did in addition to the prototype was create this video around it where I'm basically going through the prototype and I'm basically pitching the idea of, hey, we should focus on search instead. And here are all the three ways that would truly enrich, like, you know, Figma's product. And this is what it would look like in the product. And then in the end, also explain how it ladders up to autocomplete, how this isn't like a departure, but actually a stepping stone to like some of the bigger things we're trying to do. So that became a 2 to 3 minute video that ultimately ended up like going viral across the company and also really helped in these conversations with like partner teams, because now I don't have to do all the explaining myself. I just shoot them a video and boom, we're done.
Quick sidebar. It took a little bit of a back and forth with the Figma PR team, but I got access to that video that Vincent shared internally, and I'm gonna play the beginning of it for you now.
It's almost 5 p.m. and you're on a design deadline and you're scrambling to make it, but you just can't find the freaking design files you're looking for. You ask your coworkers on Slack where the design files are, but they don't know. And now you just miss your deadline. Your entire career is gone. Well, everyday designers waste countless of hours looking for the design files. And that's why the machine learning platform team has been exploring three search features to build. So the first one is image-based search. Figma is a visual design tool, so of course you should be able to search by an image.
If you want to see the rest of the video, I'll share the full thing in the Dive newsletter. You can head to dive.club to subscribe. But for now, let's keep going with the episode. Can you talk a little bit about pitching visual search as a building block? Like when you look at this, why do you think it's the right foundation and what types of experiences could it unlock in the future that you find particularly exciting?
For sure. I think with a lot of like AI, it just helps to think of like, how do humans go about a problem, right? And if we think about how product designers design, we need to know what has been designed. If you're designing a checkout page, right, you need to know like, okay, what checkout pages has my company designed before? Like, what's the one that's currently in production? And you maybe need to like also know what like the page before the checkout page looks like. So designers need to have some kind of internal search step, right? Where before they design a screen, they do search themselves. We really believe that for any AI design assistant, that's true too. So we've been talking about autocomplete a lot, where autocomplete probably gets better if it's able to have context as to what's been designed in your organization in the past. But you've also, for instance, seen Make Designs, where Make Designs currently just spits out, you know, these designs that don't have any context about your organization. But in the future, as Dylan talked about, we want to, you know, give that design system support. And we also want to give it context about your organization, right? We're never going to be able to design something sensible if we design whatever, like your checkout page in a vacuum. So that's where we really think search is, it's powerful. We can put these search as, and in the industry, this is called RAG, like in front of all these AI systems, and suddenly they'll get better and they'll be more contextual to your work.
Okay, so you have the prototype in the video.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday it shipped. Talked about a flagship item in the keynote. What were some of the differences between what you originally demonstrated and what made it to production? And can you talk a little bit about those decisions and the product strategy behind those evolutions?
So initially in my prototype, I'm imagining it in the file browser. I figure file browser would be a good place to put this because that's where people already search for their files. But we have a lot of other AI features that we were working on, right? So we have rename layers, we have make designs. So it was kind of tempting to put it in editor instead because all of a sudden you get fun little synergy with like those features. And ultimately, you know, a search feature should be available in editor, right? Because you don't want to force designers to always go to file browser whenever they need to look something up. So that's why we, for instance, in this case, started in the editor instead of file browser, which is like a huge difference between my initial prototype and what shits. And then there's, of course, you know, along the way, a bunch of weird concepts that like you didn't see in the keynote, but that we also tried.
Can you talk a little bit more about some of the weird concepts?
We tried a bunch of different things. So when we first like toyed around, played around with the idea of search, we were looking for the right form factor. So at some point we had this idea of a section that you could drag designs into. And as you drop designs into the section, it would kind of perform a search.
Oh.
And then just kind of like auto expand like your section with, you know, search results. So in that way, search is a mood board, if you will.
Hmm.
And then we were also fascinated by the idea that given a search result, a designer might want more of something. So what if we let them rabbit hole on like a single design, which means, okay, what if there was a way for a designer to say, give me more like this? So we built a bunch of funky prototypes, and Mark did an amazing job here where, yeah, you have this grid and you click on one item and then suddenly more of that item and that style like pops up. So none of those things ultimately shipped, in part because, you know, Actions is a really like speed oriented service where we want to like just get out of people's way. We're in the editor after all. But I do think that a lot of those ideas and certainly rabbit holing, I hope, will make its way back in the future. But
I'm very interested in rabbit holing. Like a lot of the things that have shipped have kind of focused on blank canvas work right now, which totally makes sense as a foundation. But I'm like, how can we use this in more of like an iterative way that can help me kind of take what is initially in my brain and just see it in so many different ways?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so something else that you kind of just illuminated for me that I wasn't aware of is just the culture internally at Figma of like what is in staging and how you kind of have to even get people excited about the different ideas that you're testing. So can you talk a little bit about how you mobilize this idea in the staging environment at Figma?
Yeah. So we at Figma, we constantly ship to staging. And staging basically means the internal version of Figma that's available to people. Our goal was to always ship to staging as fast as possible, even if it's somewhat bad. So we tried out a lot of like wonky ideas, right? So at some point, you know, we're building search, but Actions doesn't yet exist. So we have to put an entry point somewhere. So we put an entry point just straight on the canvas because we want people to use search. And it's completely in people's way. People bump into it like accidentally, but shipping to staging, I think the point is that it just gives you a bunch of feedback very quickly. When you ship a bad idea, like an on-canvas entry point that's in everybody's way, you just get a lot of feedback. So shipping to staging and, you know, trying out ideas internally was super instrumental. But sometimes shipping to staging isn't enough, you know? When you have an on-canvas entry point, of course, everyone's going to try it because, okay, they're going to see a search icon every time they click on a layer. It's very obvious. But often when you ship to staging, they're just crickets and people just don't try what you want. So even internally, you have to, like, sell people. So at one point for visual search, I created this kind of like marketing video almost, when we had just launched visual search to staging, that just shows someone in Slack, ask, where is this design? And then they click out of the window and then music starts playing and visual search pops up and the designer finds their design super quickly and the layers are editable. So yeah, video was, again, one of the ways in which I tried convincing people to use stuff on staging, because staging users are real users too. They're not always going to try your stuff.
I love it. I love that you're just keep returning to video as a way to get people excited. We sourced a few questions from Twitter, and one of the concerns that I've seen bubble up a few times is like, how do you make sure that you're showing users the right thing? Like, I don't want to have to deal with outdated screens or components. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about how you're thinking about that challenge?
Yeah, and this is an area we're still very much working on, but it is one of my biggest concerns, was for sure, like making sure that design system administrators feel comfortable using this feature or having their users use this feature, and that it doesn't propagate bad designs. So in this case, I think it comes down to ranking. There are a lot of ways in which designers tell whether a design is good or bad, right? You get into a file and you look at the page names and you see a page called a graveyard, you see a page called MVP. Which one should you use? And then in a file, right, there's a lot more signals like that. You can look at, like, when was a design last edited? Is it marked ready for dev or not? Is it marked as ready for completed or not? So I think in the near future, we'll start incorporating some of those signals. And it's not going to be perfect, but we're just going to incorporate all those ways in which designers tell whether a design is canonical or not. And we're going to incorporate that into our search system. But there will always be a risk of, you know, us sometimes servicing an old iteration that you probably didn't want to be serviced. But right now you also have that risk, right? Like, I can jump into your design file. I can accidentally, whatever, riff on the wrong iteration. That happens. But that's the price you sometimes pay for, you know, unlocking new workflows.
Hey guys, real quick, if you know me, then you know I love products. So I want to take just 30 seconds to tell you about three of my favorites. Now, anytime that I'm designing and building a website, you better believe that I'm gonna use Framer. I made the switch recently and I'm never going back. Now, once it's time to animate my designs and showcase my work, that's when I'm gonna use Jitter. It's like Figma, only for motion design. And every step of the way, I'm gonna be using Raycast constantly. It's the cornerstone of how I use my computer and the way that I stay in flow while I work. Now, I hand-selected Framer, Raycast, and Jitter to partner with me so that I could do these interviews full time. So if you want to show them some love, it would mean a lot. Okay, now on to the rest of the episode.
You mentioned being a design engineer in spirit, even though you kind of been put a little bit into the traditional engineer box. I want to talk about that more, because you said something that I found really interesting. You talked about how design engineers have the ability to see opportunities that sometimes others can't see. Can you talk a little bit more about that and the role that it played in this project?
So I think it all started right with the component suggestions project. We realized that building actual autocompletes was super hard. But because I have knowledge of both design and engineering, I realized that, hey, there's a version of autocomplete component suggestions that we can build that's feasible from both a technical perspective, but also simultaneously appealing to designers. So that's something you can constantly do, where you can look at the state of your technology and the constraints you have there. And if you then look at the opportunities and the user problems in design, and then if you're a design engineer, you by yourself can kind of see the Venn diagram and you can see the opportunities, which is like super compelling. And for search too, right? We have this user problem of users posting Slack all the time that they're looking for a design. And we have this technology opportunity, I guess, where reverse image search technology has been around for forever. It's actually really good. Let's combine these two and let's connect the dots here and let's build visual search. And if you're not a design engineer, you can still get to those insights, right? This normally happens is that a designer observes a problem, users are finding a design, and an engineer has all the backgrounds. And then the way an idea or like a project happens is they bump into each other and they have a few meetings, and then they finally, after a few meetings, share their mind share with each other. And then they realize, oh, there's a great opportunity here. But if you're a design engineer, you can kind of skip those meetings because you're both people at once, right? You can see both sides at once, which I find very compelling.
You know, we talk so much about, oh, how will AI impact the role of design? But what about the design engineer? Like, if you kind of imagine what the future of this role might look like, what are some of the things that you have your eye on or trends that you anticipate might continue?
one design engineer persona that will really appear is a machine learning focused design engineer. Hmm. I think that's a pretty safe bet. Hmm. I think one design engineer persona we have seen a lot in our industry, which is it's like the WebGL focused design engineer, right? You're a design engineer and you're really good at WebGL at the same time too, or something like that. And you, whatever, you make pretty marketing pages a lot of the time, which is great. But yeah, it's a very narrow interpretation of design engineering. But I think another version of design engineering we might get is, yeah, the design engineer that's a lot more machine learning focused, that is fine-tuning their own models to really help bridge the gap between design and engineering, that's really reading the most recent machine learning papers and seeing how embeddings can be useful throughout the various user journeys that they're solving for. So I think that's one of the ways in which design engineering probably will change.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's like you can see a world where so many of the interfaces that we are designing are just, at the end of the day, really just feeding context into an underlying model. And there is this feeling that, like, okay, technical empathy on being able to understand what the heck is actually happening will become more important. So it's interesting to hear you talk about like machine learning versus WebGL, because I almost wonder how designers will, like, you almost need someone to maybe help them bridge that gap of understanding of like, what's even possible? So I think a traditional designer, that's a big part of our job, is asking what's possible, what could we do here? And now a lot of that answer is tied to technological capability in a way that's a little bit more of a black box than it's been historically.
No, totally. And I think that's where it's interesting to have a design engineering, like, you know, design engineer take a look at machine learning, right? Because I think a lot of machine learning engineers, they're only focused on using their research for a very narrow set of things. So often they don't even realize how awesome the models they're sitting on R. So if you don't have a design engineer kind of peeking over into their fields, exploring the latest models, then I think for a lot of models, we'll never realize, you know, how they can be used and the awesome things they might unlock.
Can we make it a little bit more practical for someone that's slightly less technical?
Mm-hmm.
What's something that you've learned about AI, machine learning, LLMs, whatever, that's influenced the way that you think about what good design looks like in the future?
A lot of it is, again, comes down to, I think, that ultimately design will now just be like content driven. Like if you look at Instagram, right, like only a tiny part of the Instagram actual design is sort of static things, like it's the tab bar and whatever. But the majority of the screen is just dynamic content. What I'm realizing increasingly is that designers should really design with the algorithm, for the algorithm, and should really consider like, okay, how does my design feel and look with various types of content? And they should try to get as close to that real design as possible, where instead of whatever, just drawing pretty pictures, they should try and plug real data into their designs and plug the real algorithm into their designs and see how that evolves. Because without it, you're just not going to succeed designing this new world.
I want to go even deeper on that. Like, let's speak to a very specific listener right now who's like mid-career, stable job, content. They don't really know how to code. They've noticed an uptick in more technical dialogue on Twitter or this show or whatever. Why should they care? Like, what does it actually unlock to invest time in growing these technical muscles as a designer?
Because it's the most fun you'll ever have, I think, which is a cop-out answer that probably people don't want to hear. But when I got into design engineering, I think a lot of like other people I know is we got into design engineering because it was like super fun. Like if you're designing in a design tool, often you're designing something 80% of the way, right? And then the last 20% is done in code, which is why we at Figma think it's so important, right, to bridge the gap between designers and developers. So in a way, by becoming a design engineer, I see it as a way to obtain more things to design, right? Now you can also worry about that last 20% that happens in code. You're getting yourself more design work. Now all of a sudden you get to worry about all these fun little state machines of all these corner cases that normally only engineers worry about. So in a lot of ways, you're still designing, you're just designing a different medium, which I think is super compelling about design engineering. But yeah, it is truly the most fun you'll ever have. And I think that's the reason why people should do it. If you're just wanting to make money, I'm sure that design roles will keep existing. And there will, of course, always be a role for like specialist designers too, right? Like if you're a really great visual designer, you're going nowhere. Like you don't have to become a design engineer. Do this because it's the most fun.
I like that answer. You talked about bridging the gap between design and development.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the AI use cases that were shipped yesterday make a heck of a lot of sense, but they don't speak directly to that opportunity as much. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about the role that AI might play in condensing that gap.
We saw it a lot with Code Connect, right? Like where as you're designing, now you can like get code snippets already for your design, right? And as a designer, you don't have to use that, but it does give you a sense into how engineers think. And I think with AI, we're only going to, for instance, make those code snippets better, right? So that's one way, like AI is going to make code generation better. And that, of course, is going to bring design closer to engineering. Then another thing that's happening is that AI is going to make it easier for designers to think about state machines, right? I think ultimately a big gap between designers and engineers is just whether or not you think in state machines. Do you think about all the various cases that can happen to your design and how your design will respond to it? And right now it's very hard for designers to, one, be aware of all those cases, but also think about them, right? As you saw yesterday, right, with the AI prototyping tools, suddenly a designer is able to wire up a functioning prototype, right, from their design. And suddenly they're able, because of that, thanks to AI, they're able to already start testing their design for certain cases, right? Like, oh, what happens if the user clicks here, but they're on this screen? Do I have that case covered? So in that sense, like, AI is going to make it a lot easier for designers to start thinking about their designs in more complex ways. And as they do, that eventually, secretly, I think will turn them into engineering, right? Because once you have a prototype, then you're only so close to the engineering world because you're one step away from actually making it real in code.
I like that connection. And I do think that's part of what it even looks like to have more of an engineering mindset as a designer, is being able to spot more and more of these edge cases and unique states. So I think most
of what there is to it, probably. Yeah.
This has been amazing. Before I let you go, though, what's a piece of feedback that you've been given in your career that's had an impact on who you are now as a designer and engineer?
Two pieces of feedback from two minds. Probably the most thoughtful feedback I've ever gotten was from my design manager at Amazon. I was a design intern at Amazon, and I was hungry for success and wanting to prove myself. So I would work every day, all day, go in on weekends, and I was just wanting to make this internship work so badly. And in the end, after a lot of stumbling, it did work out. My internship was successful. But in my review, specifically in my review packets, my manager left this note just for me that he had added last minute, where it's something like, Vincent, there is more to this world than just working, studying, and then going to sleep and then doing it all over again. Don't forget to go to a foreign city, visit museums, fall in love. Because that will not only make your life much, much more richer, which is something I realize now, but it's also where a large part of your design intuition comes from, right? Like, it's very hard as a designer or design engineer to like solve problems if you're not a real human being yourself. If all you do is, you know, be glued at your laptop. I go back and forth on whether, you know, on implementing that advice. You know, there's weeks where I'm terrible at it and weeks where I realize, oh man, Jason was right all along. But it was a very meaningful piece of feedback. The other piece of feedback that I've gotten was from my friend Yuki when I was a designer at Facebook. He just saw me live as a designer, and he saw me day to day. And one day we met up, and he basically told me, when we are designing and coding together, I see like this spark in your eye. But when you're just designing, I don't really see it. Like, is this really like what you want to do? And at that point, I realized, oh, yeah, man, like, why did I ever give up code? I should totally go back to being a design engineer and trying to make that happen.
Well, I'm glad that you went back to it, because you've obviously had a big impact on Config and what you've shipped and, you know, the experience that we're going to have even using Figma moving forward. So congratulations on an epic release, all the hard work. It's been really awesome to see.
Thank you. Yeah, I hope people will use and love visual search and all the other cool ways to search we go.
Awesome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, it's Rid. Don't forget, if you want to go even deeper, each week I send an email out to over 10,000 designers with bonus resources and key takeaways from these conversations. So head to dive.club/email to sign up. Okay, I'll see you next week.